Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. See vodafone.ie/business.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll say a long goodbye to the Microsoft blue screen of death. Derek Riley is going to join me with some recommendations for your very first car. And as ever, I'll answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. I mentioned the Derek Riley piece. So we are one of us in my house. There's only two of us in the house, but one of us is learning to drive. And we're now having the conversation of what car do we buy and why does it make sense, or does it make sense, for an EV to be our very first vehicle? So I'm essentially abusing my position and having Derek in to answer my questions. But if you have any for him, techtalk@newstalk.com is that email address. We also saw the implementation of the online safety code this week. It has been, I suppose, not ideal, for want of a better phrase. A lot of the issues that we flagged on this programme last week with Alex Cooney of CyberSafe Kids have come to fruition, namely the age assurance side of things, ensuring that children aren't seeing inappropriate content. Also the limitations of the online safety code in that it only targets 10 websites. It's still playing out. Time will tell how it's going to go. But as I said earlier in the week, you know, a lot of people were hoping this was going to be a silver bullet for keeping their kids safe online. And that just isn't the case. I would love to know, though, have you seen any difference? Do you feel more empowered as a parent navigating this space? Do drop me a line. And it is something that we will absolutely continue to watch. But I want to start this week with something completely different, and that is the end of Microsoft's blue screen of death. Ciara O'Brien of the Irish Times was writing about it this week, and she joins me now. Ciara, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you very much. I'm just back off holidays, so I feel kind of rested because it's going to take at least another 3 days before I feel like I've never been away.
Yeah, we are talking because I was reading one of the pieces you wrote this week, and it made my heart happy, but also brought back some traumatic memories. And it is about the blue screen of death. For those who've never had the pain and the privilege of encountering it, just take us on an introductory guide before we talk about it being killed off.
So the blue screen of death is basically the critical stop, the error screen you see before your computer just shuts itself down and takes all of your work with it. And, you know, it's less and less, I've seen it less and less in the last, because say probably the last 10 years, but there was a point where, you know, anything could cause it. So say the computer was working too hard, didn't like it, blue screen of death, shut down. A driver was conflicting with another driver, blue screen of death, shut down. And it was just so destroying. I think, like, I lost so much work from, you know, from this, because, and I know people will say, save as you go, save as you go. But, you know, when you're working across different machines, every machine has a different setting. Now, my default now is autosave every minute, because I have absolute, like, stress from this, you know, from my college years. And I think the most memorable one was when I was writing my thesis, you know, up against a deadline as per usual, because that's how I work. And it took most of a chapter. And it was, I mean, when I say chapter, like, I mean, we're talking, you know, a couple of thousand words here. You know, it was kind of, it was a significant amount of work. It was probably a few hundred words, close to 1,000 words. And it was several hours of work because, you know, it was painstakingly done. And it took it all with it. And I had to rewrite it, which, as you know, is it's never as good the second time around. I could argue this was my best work, but we'll never know because it was lost somewhere in a file dump in a Windows system on a shared college computer.
Yeah, I had something similar. I remember I had a gorgeous red Dell XPS machine that I bought with my own money when I was in college, and I was so thrilled with myself because it looked great. And like that, in my final year in college, I met with the blue screen of death. And this was back before, now, am I right in saying this? I think it was back before autosave was a thing. So if you had stuff saved, or if you didn't have stuff saved, the blue screen of death appeared and the entire thing just went kaput. And what was really frustrating at the time was I couldn't understand why. It's not like I had dropped it. I hadn't been mean to it. I told it was beautiful every single day of the week, and yet it still died on me. And it was such a source of frustration.
Yes, and I mean, and as you say, there was a point where autosaving wasn't a thing, but I did not learn my lesson. Well, I did learn my lesson to a certain degree, but as I said, you're moving around so many machines. On my own laptop, everything was saved regularly. But when you were moving into shared machines, every machine had different settings, and you could kind of save things in different places. And even if you did save it, there was a chance you might not be able to find it if it dumped all the files. It was just awful. It was definitely, I mean, and I was very nice, like you, very nice to my tech, loved my tech, had a very, very good laptop that treated me properly. But every so often, it was either a bug in the system, a bug in the software. It was just something wasn't feeling right. It got out of bed the wrong side. It was a day with a Y in it. You don't know what caused it because at the time I wouldn't have been massively techy. And even now, I mean, the old screen you used to get was like this absolute, just it was just like this list of computer errors. And unless you were techie, you really couldn't understand it. And over time they kind of refined it. So the last ones that people probably would have seen would have been the one with the little frowny face, or the little kind of sad face, that I always kind of felt like it was mocking you. So it gave you a little bit of information and a QR code if you needed to find out more information as to why your computer was suddenly deciding that it was having a sit down protest. But that little frowny face, and it's like, oh, something's gone wrong, we have to restart. And it was like, oh, sucks to be you, but I don't care. That's
I always
really
found
what
it.
I, oh God, I hated it. Every time I saw it, I was just like, oh no.
I always found it really passive aggressive, of like, ah, joke's on you. You're up the creek without a paddle. But it was
Sad for
also
you.
so passive aggressive. But it was also useful in that if you were at an ATM, or if you were at some event and there was blue screen, you knew that the screens weren't working because the blue screen of death was so iconic. And
And
there
they
were
were
very,
instantly recognizable.
yeah.
Instantly recognizable.
And there are famous examples from the last few years. Like in your article, you referenced some of them where everybody knew that there was a big issue because of that blue screen.
Yes, CrowdStrike. We all remember CrowdStrike. Planes were grounded. Banks couldn't work. Doctors in the UK couldn't take appointments, access medical records, because everybody was on the, like, they were all using these virtual Windows machines, and a bad update pushed out to all these machines, took down everything. Now, and to be honest, I'm not surprised that they decided to retire this screen, as as we were talking about in the article, because if you saw that, if you saw the chaos that that caused, I mean, especially say in the US, where I think it was Delta had an awful time of it, because not only did they have to cancel thousands of flights, then it meant that all the crew were in the wrong place. And it took weeks to actually kind of to get back on track, because crew were in the wrong place, which meant they were showing up to the gate and then they were out of hours because there was more delays, and there was knock-on delays for the delays and people trying to get their bags back. And it was just absolute chaos. So I'd say, anybody who kind of was affected by CrowdStrike, and even those who were only kind of tangentially affected by it, because maybe they had one small delay in a flight somewhere, they couldn't land at a particular airport and they had to be redirected to another one. I think anytime you see that blue screen now, it triggers this kind of visceral, reaction where, you almost the eye starts twitching and you just get transported back to that horrible time, and nobody wants to see that ever again. So I think with partly, possibly partly with this in mind, Microsoft have decided they're going to retire this screen. And instead, and of course, we're not getting rid of the unexpected restart, as they keep calling it. The blue screen of death is what we call it. They call it an unexpected restart. We're getting a black screen instead. Now, this is not entirely new, because the blue screen of death kind of was early 90s. I think 1993 was Windows NT 3.1, where it kind of came up first. But in Windows 3.1 and in other older versions of Windows, when you got an unexpected error, you'd get a black screen. So now we're getting the black screen of death instead. So the BSOD acronym still works. It just doesn't really have the same ring to it. And you're going to get, it's a nice little message that says, you know, something unexpected happened. Something very simple, you know, and a little counter to say, you know, to a percentage kind of progress indicator. And then at the bottom, you'll have like this whatever stop code, if you can be bothered to read down that far. Or if you're interested, if you need to know what the error code was or what the error was, you know, there will be that small bit of information there as well. So they're not overloading you. The black screen is probably a bit less, you know, twitch inducing than the blue screen is. But, you know, it's the end of an era. I'm not going to miss it. I'm not going to lie. I have seen a lot less of it, because there was a kind of a point where you would see it a lot when Windows was a lot buggier. And yeah. I think, I don't know if it's down to the fact that things automatically update now. Updates are pushed out so often. You don't have to remember to go in and update things. You know, Windows will do a for you drivers update automatically. All of that stuff that's kind of taken a lot of the stress out of the whole thing. But, you know, I haven't seen it. I guarantee I'm going to get it now. But anyway, we haven't seen it in a while. So, I'm not going to miss it. I'm hoping between now and the time that, you know, Microsoft has rolls out the update, that we'll get rid of this screen altogether. I don't see it, because it will mean that something critical has happened to my machine. And, you know, I'm not really a fan of unexpected restarts, because it usually means more work for me.
It does make me feel a little bit nostalgic here, though, because like Skype has just gone by the wayside. You referenced Clippy in your article. I was watching something online the other day and I saw, do you remember the old Solitaire and Minecraft games that you used to play on Windows? Minesweeper. Sorry, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, because Minecraft is still around and it still looks like the old days, but that's the whole point. I lost so many hours to Solitaire. And you know, you can still get that, you know, and Clippy, I mean, everybody hated Clippy. We kind of look back nostalgically now, but that's the rose tinted glass. That thing was annoying. You know, you'd be doing something and it'd pop up and it'd be like, oh, I see you're trying to write a letter. I was like, no, I'm not trying to write a letter. Just leave me alone. But when they killed off Clippy, I think somebody resurrected it as a standalone kind of bit of software. You could argue that Copilot is essentially Clippy, just a bit smarter and repackaged. And it's the kind of thing that you actually, if you have a newer laptop, you activate accidentally because of the Copilot key that is right beside your Alt, whatever, the other Alt key that we never use. And right beside, on my laptop, as I'm looking at it now, an arrow key. And one of the first things, somebody in my office, who shall remain nameless to protect his anonymity, he asked me, he's like, can you get rid of this? And I was like, well, you can't get rid of the Copilot key, but you can just disable it. It doesn't do anything. So you can remap it, you know. But anyway, so, you know, it's as annoying to a whole new generation of people, because he is of, I don't mind saying he is of the generation kind of that came after Clippy. You know, he has never had the, I would say pleasure, but I remember how annoying this thing was. He's never had the experience of being interrupted by a paperclip. So, you know, I mean, like, this is a whole new traumatizing thing for the next generation, except this time it'll be Copilot asking, you know, can it help? Just in a more subtle way.
Yeah. That thing of the Copilot key, I have a slightly older machine that doesn't have the Copilot key, but I do have Copilot locked on my taskbar thing, and I have it ingrained, obviously, in my Teams and my Outlook and all the rest. Do you get the sense that people are using Copilot in the way that it's intended as of yet? Or is it just people like me and you who know how it works, know how we can use it effectively, and so dip into it?
I think we're still very early days and stuff like this. Obviously, Microsoft is integrated heavily into its software, so it's not going anywhere anytime soon. And I think, like a lot of things in the Windows system, you'll find your uses for it. Different AIs will have different uses. I know, like, there's been a lot of, I could point to some bad uses of ChatGPT, but, you know, there's a lot of good uses of it out there. Same with Gemini on Android devices. You know, as people get used to it, they expect more from it. And this is the thing, and this is going to be the key thing for companies that are pushing all this AI software, that if you have AI on your devices, make sure it can do what, not so much what people expect, but what you say it can, and find out what people hope for it. You know, I mean, a lot of people are disappointed with Apple Intelligence because Siri, which is the real kind of the no-brainer for AI, the smarter Siri hasn't made an appearance yet. Obviously, it's been a bit more work than they thought. And that is the one thing that I want from Apple Intelligence, because I don't want every time I hit that Apple Intelligence key for it to ask me, does it want me to search the web or does it want me to ask ChatGPT? I just want it to work. I want it to do something. So the same with Copilot, and as well as because with Copilot, obviously it's bundled into productivity suites. People are paying money for it. You know, you want something that works. People will pay for something that they find useful. The thing is making sure that it is actually useful to people, not just tech for tech's sake. Because look, you and I are very much on a like a an AI kind of, we're the not the target market for AI as such, because we're already there. You know what, the target market for AI is everybody else, who might not necessarily find the use for it straight away, but will gradually integrate it into their daily lives. Much as if you've seen like smart speakers, I mean, how many people, when Amazon released the Echo, first of all, how many people thought, oh, that will never come into my house? And how many people now have them and use them and talk to these devices and use them as part of the smart home they said they'd never have, you know, because they've got bulbs that are automatic or plugs that are Wi-Fi connected. And you know, it's a slow burn, I think, for a lot of these things. So I think if we come back to it maybe another year or two, there'll be more people using it. And I think as companies find uses for it, because that's where it's going to be the real selling point for people. It's not, you know, they're not going to make a huge amount of money out of, say, my parents using AI, but they will make money out of companies adopting it for use in the workplace because they're finding uses for it. So AIB, for example, has integrated Copilot into some of, not all of its systems, because obviously customer facing system or customer kind of information systems have to be kept, you know, that you can't have AI dipping in and out of certain systems. But they have actually integrated it into some of the systems that the staff use. So, you know, they integrate it into Outlook and, you know, a day-to-day things that people will find useful and then will maybe in their private lives will look for the same functionality. So they want, you know, something to crawl their email and say, this is what your appointments are for the day. These are the important emails you need to reply to today. This is an email that needs your attention now instead of you having to figure out where it is in your inbox. So I think, you know, as people use it day to day, much in the same way that, you know, people wanted to bring their own devices into work, and that kind of pushed on, say, the likes of using laptops rather than desktops and mobile phones for certain things and accessing email, company email on mobile phones. People wanted to bring their own devices and the functionality of their own devices. It will work the opposite way as well, that people who are using these tools in their work life will get used to kind of being able to do things an easier way or a more efficient way, and will then try to replicate that, you know, from their personal email, which is probably far more stuffed with spam and rubbish and could probably do with AI tweaking more than your work email. Though I will say my work email is also a bit of a dumpster fire.
We love you for your honesty, Ciara, as always. Ciara O'Brien of the Irish Times, thanks so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thanks very much.